Now, it's The Six with the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show.
Yeah! Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show. 1 year on the air. 1 year to the day. Obviously, boy, how things have changed in a year. It was a much simpler time back then, where you were thinking about the prospect of James and that number one recruiting class. We were thinking Final Four and what could this team do? Would they be a new Fab Five? Something, things like that. And obviously, James only ended up playing three games for Memphis, and he never actually, and then he left the team. And obviously, he's kind of a controversial topic in a lot of ways. Heading into the NBA draft. Jeffrey, do we have some highlights from the Wiseman interview? It was a really good interview, I thought. I mean, I thought it was really fun to hear his thoughts on how the recruiting class came together.
It was an interview where I was super pumped that he was in studio, because sometimes when you're on the phone, one of the biggest misconceptions about a lot of these elite-level recruits, it drives me insane when coaches want to shelter them from the media. These kids are so media savvy today because, everyone's been calling them for recruiting information, whatnot. They know how to do these interviews. The reason why I thought it was so good that he was in studio with us is because he got to kind of interact with us and understand, hey, we just want to talk to you. And there was a really good atmosphere, and you did a great job of setting up, hey, here's what I really want to do. And what I want to do is, we've had all these people break down the signing class. You've been such a key part, and it's been,
And that's what I think gets lost a little bit in the discussion of, some people, whether he left the team, quit the team. He played a huge role in all these other guys coming here. Like, I don't think Precious Achiuwa is here without James. I don't think Boogie Ellis is here without James. I don't think Lester Quinones is here without James. So I know there's some disappointment in how things turned out, but there was also some real good, long-term good, that came out of James Wiseman's brief tenure at Memphis.
Here's a little bit of that interview.
Now we'll go into the last week where Memphis really became the story in college basketball.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me the story you told me on Friday night about how you found out Precious Achiuwa was committing and what he sort of did to other guys in the class.
Okay, so Precious and Lester are really close friends. They played together on the UAA circuit. So Precious was telling Lester that he wasn't coming to Memphis. Basically, he was trying to surprise him. So Lester was kind of angry and upset. He was he was texting us every day like, oh, my God, Precious is not coming. Then, like he almost had a migraine headache or something. So he was kind of mad. And then Precious committed out of nowhere. Then he was surprised. And then he started. Then after that, he texts Precious and was like, why did you do that? Like, that is
crazy. And Precious told you, right?
Yeah.
He told you, like, Tuesday? Is that what you told me?
Mm-hmm.
So you knew for 3 days, kept it quiet, and you let him just kind of mess with Lester a little bit.
Yeah.
Was it as funny to y'all as it was to us?
Yes. I mean, it was hilarious. Just looking back on it, I was like, he just surprised all of us. But actually, I knew, like, 2 days beforehand, 3 days before, but I just didn't want to tell Lester.
When you told the Commercial Appeal's Kari Thompson on Friday night that Precious was the hardest yet for this staff, for you as a player, recruiter, yep. Why was he so hard to convince? And what do you think ultimately convinced him to come to Memphis?
Because he was keeping it to himself, He really wasn't trying to tell nobody where he wanted to go. And I was trying to convince him and trying to inform him that Memphis is about to be on the come up, so you just have to come and play with us and we can make something happen historically. So really, he just kept it to himself, and then he finally committed out of nowhere. Everybody was shocked. So
yeah, and you played with him at the McDonald's game, right? Mm-hmm. Was that the first time you had been in the same sort of – were you on the same team at McDonald's or different team?
No, sir, I was on a different team.
Different team. But in terms of playing with him, how do you think you guys will fit? How well do you know his game? Because obviously I remember talking to you even the day you committed to Memphis, you said you were going after Precious Achiuwa. Why did you think he was going to be such a good fit for you down low?
A very versatile player. He can rebound the ball in any area on the floor. He can shoot. He can shoot the ball. His shot is getting better. But I saw him improved over the years. He's just a great player all around. He's an all-around player. So, and I feel that he'll help me down low.
All right, I do have one little thing to nitpick with you here.
Mm-hmm.
You know how you said, like, you wanted to have a big guest show one?
Mm-hmm.
Don't set the bar that high.
Well, and it is, I mean, listening to that, it does make you a little bit sad that we didn't get to really see Precious and James play together. He was dead on that Precious can rebound the ball in any area. And so at least we got Precious for a year. He was spectacular. And now they're both headed to the NBA. And here, you know what? In the NBA draft, whenever it does occur, they could help. You know, I know they didn't really team up much as players here at Memphis, but if they both go in the lottery, I think that's going to be a real boost for the Memphis basketball program. If Memphis can be the only, let's say, the only program in the country with two lottery picks this year.
No question. And it just does make me realize, and I don't think it's anywhere near where some of the emotions are for other former players. I do hope that Memphis fans can celebrate him.
I don't know. You don't have to celebrate him. I just don't think it should be held against
animosity.
Him. I just don't think, you know, I think that he was pulled in a lot of directions by a lot of people, and we should just accept the fact that it didn't work out the way any of us wanted, but it also wasn't necessarily a horrible thing. Like I said, a lot of these guys that ended up coming to Memphis in that number one recruiting class would not have come here if James had not signed and committed with Memphis. And so that's my thinking. It's like, I don't necessarily say you should celebrate James Wiseman, but I do think, animosity is just, it is what it is at this point. And it'll be a what if, one of those Memphis sports what ifs for a long time. And it's unfortunate, but I don't think it should be held against James or something like that. He certainly will not be remembered as one of the great Tigers of all time, but that's what happens when you only play three games. And so it's unfortunate, but obviously one of the big stories of the year. And honestly, his presence looms over the program moving forward with this IARP case, the infractions case moving forward. We'll see what happens with that over our second year on air.
Indeed. And then we turned to the summer and Mark's absolute domination on big time bookings continued. And I don't remember if you told us in person during our pre-show meeting or if you texted us, and it was just as simple as, I got squints.
Well, yeah, I can get squints from the Sandlot. Do we want them? And I believe the reaction was, I believe it was no S.
Yeah.
We want squints from the Sandlot. So he was in Memphis. It was Sandlot night at one of the Redbirds games. Throughout the first pitch, signed some autographs. And so we got to.
Sang the seventh inning stretch.
Okay, yep. And, you know, we got to talk to him about Wendy Peppercorn and the Sandlot.
Oh, boy, did we.
And, yeah, so here's what was his real name? Do we know?
Chauncey Leopardi.
Chauncey Leopardi, a.k.a. Squints from the Sandlot, one of my one of the favorite interviews of the year. Let's hear some from Squints.
Chauncey Leopardi, who played Michael Squints Palladores.
Who is your favorite character in the movie other than Squints?
Wendy Peppercorn.
Good answer. Good answer.
Yeah.
We've been talking behind the scenes here. Obviously, that is like the scene for Squints when he sneaks in the kiss to Wendy Peppercorn coming out of the pool. It's been on my brain since we lined up this interview. How many takes did you get to do of that scene?
Quite a few. We shot it for half a day, so it's amazing. Yeah.
Do you still talk to her? I forget what the actress's name is, but Wendy.
Her name's Marley Shelton.
Yeah. Do you guys still communicate at all?
We've seen each other at an autograph signing last year in Philadelphia, but it was the first time we've seen each other since we shot the film, basically. So
wow.
I got to sit with her for a few hours and talk, and it was nice to catch up. But no, I haven't really seen her or communicated with her since.
What was the age gap between y'all when you filmed the scene?
I want to say I was 11, so I think she was either 17 or 19. I can't remember.
God, good for you.
Nice.
This begs the question, though.
This is a debate that that I've been having with Mark, with Connor here on the show. I think you invented shooting your shot. Like, if you look at it in 1962, the way that Squints laid it all on the line, it was an all or nothing play. It was a Hail Mary. I think you are the seminal moment of shooting your shot. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I don't know if that's the proper thing to do anymore in this
it's
era. But yeah, you know, it was definitely an adolescent play. There was no, like, I don't know. It's like the creepiest uncreepy thing ever done, right?
Yeah, there isn't I think the thing that inevitably makes it not creepy is there is still kind of an innocence about it. You know what I mean? It's an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
Like every kid that went to the pool had a crush on at least one of the lifeguards. Like, I feel like that is part of it. It's like, yeah, there is an innocence to it.
No, definitely. Yeah. No, I do believe that. You know, we can learn a lot from you know, just going for it, like Squints did. You know. I mean, I think there's definitely some philosophical teachings there. What would Squints do?
There's two things that I absolutely love about this. Number one, how quickly he answered Wendy Peppercorn.
Yeah.
Like, he gave the you know what I mean? Like,
to be fair, he's probably done a lot of these interviews over the years.
For sure. And you could also tell when we were trying to ask him about Wendy Peppercorn, there was no intention of, gotcha, and... You know, he's just sitting there. He's in L.A. He's an actor. He's like, dude, I just want to keep working, man. This is not like the world.
I mean, let's be honest. He's coming to Memphis to do Sandlot Night,
right,
for the AAA baseball
and
team.
He's not trying to make any type of headline. But at the same time, good for him. You know what I mean?
Hey,
Wendy Peppercorn smoking hot. Yes, you can say it. You can agree with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's a good-looking lady in the movie. Well, now that I know, I want to know if she was 17 or 19, because if not, it's a big difference. One's a minor, one's not.
Yeah, but he's still 11. And inevitably, this is a point that I thought about afterwards that doesn't make it creepy. She most likely could beat him up. Like, there's no power. She has all the power in that situation. You know what I mean? But
I think you're right.
It was a tremendous interview with Chauncey Leopardi, a.k.a. Michael Squints Palladouris. Okay, then we had another big moment later on in the summer. This was the first time, Mark, that I remember we were newsmakers, I guess, if you will, and that we broke news when we had...
We broke news.
There was news on our shoe. News. Blah. Easy for me to say. There was news broken on our show.
Yes, there you go.
But more importantly, we broke news, Mark, because rule number one of this very program is we don't tell the story.
We tell our story. We tell our story. Maybe in by year two, I'll have it down.
You'll have it down. Yeah. You're getting better. And I will admit, I've definitely noted, hey, it's a process. It's definitely a process. This was Mike Oresko when he joined us right before opening weekend of college football.
Yeah, AAC Commissioner Mike Oresko. Obviously, this is UConn's last year in the league, and you've come out and said, and it sounds like the league has agreed that for now, you're not planning to add anyone, and you're not planning to expand at all or replace UConn. Just, we haven't had you on since all that went down. Take us through the league's thinking in terms of sticking with what you got rather than expanding. Does it affect the new media rights deal at all? And do you ever foresee maybe 5 years from now, the stance changing?
You know, it probably, in terms of football, I doubt it will change the media deal per se, the football. I think we've actually probably gotten stronger in football. I don't know what adjustments ESPN may or may not ask for in the TV deal, and I don't want to really get into that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of our football, I don't think it's going to affect us a lot. I think, if anything, if we play with 11 teams, which we plan to, and we play it and we get a waiver and we play a championship game with the top two teams, that championship game might be better and more valuable than what we've had because, as you know, with division play, Mark, you never know what, you know, what the division team's records are going to be. In terms of...
just to cut in here real quick, Mike, are you guys considering next year getting rid of divisions?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we've already pretty much made that decision, and we've already started the waiver process with the NCAA to be able to play a championship game with 11 teams and not have to play a round robin. We think, you know, obviously playing 10 games is out of the question, you know, for all sorts of reasons. We also don't want to be forced to add a team, raid another conference. We also don't want to be forced to jettison a team. We would never do that. So we want to play with 11 teams and play the top two teams. We've already decided we're going to do that. And we're figuring out our schedules now. We've talked to the Big Ten about how they did it all those years with Penn State at 11. And we, you know, we have to figure out the permanent opponents, if any, the no plays, if any, how we do buys in November. You know, there are a bunch of things to figure out. But we.
So that was our first.
I love how you can hear me typing.
I was
literally
about to say there was another great moment that I heard in there in which. There was news broken on the show, and this is an experience that I've now just gotten used to. When news breaks on the show, Mark gets the laptop out, and he doesn't type. He punches.
You can look at my laptop.
How many laptops have you broken?
I think this
is
number.
And it's not from dropping. Literally, it's just from how he types.
I think so. Well, we have not concluded that, but yes, I'm an aggressive typer, I guess is how it's probably best phrased. But no, that's news that was it got picked up nationally, and we're gonna experience it hopefully this fall, where no divisions in the AAC. I agree with Mike Goresko. I think it's gonna make the AAC championship game. A better game. You're going to, no matter what, have the two best teams in the league rather than, you know, like 2 years ago, like when Memphis made it as a four-loss team, they weren't necessarily the second best team in the league.
Right, but they won their division.
And it's also, I think it's made, for instance, Memphis's schedule this year, I think in terms of league play, is much more interesting because there's no divisions. You know, so now you're playing UCF and Cincinnati. And it's just made it easier to have good games. You can, frankly, if you're the AAC, you can manipulate the schedule a little more in terms of matching up the teams that are expected to be good.
Yes, and of course the one risk, and the Big 12 goes through it sometimes when they play the round robin schedule in which everyone plays one another, and then there's a rematch in the title game. Inevitably, the one issue is if, you know, say Memphis is undefeated. And UCF has one loss to Memphis, then they win the championship game.
That's true.
It complicates it from that factor. But he had you could tell at that point they had very much weighed all the options. And
I just don't see, there's not another school out there
that was it.
That
to me,
gives
it was always
value.
I understand that there were people that were arguing, well, you got to get to 12, you got to get 12. And I was like, no, they don't. They don't.
If you get the waiver, you don't need to.
And then on top of that, you are now splitting revenue again. And the one thing that he said I don't want to get into, there's a legitimate issue with, now that UConn has left, how is that going to affect the television deal? And it may not affect it at all. Like there's certainly going to be an issue on that front. All right, there's two clips that we're going to play later on in the show because they're just personal favorites of mine. When Connor comes on, I was so proud. I had to, my other side job is I'm the play-by-play announcer for MUS's radio broadcast, which, fingers crossed, you can hear this fall on 790. The Owls were playing up in Nashville against Pope John Paul, and this was Mark's first time to run the show by himself and knocked it out of the park. But more importantly, he brought on an alter ego, and the alter ego is absolutely an electric factory. And more importantly, he's an electric factory because he seems to know all of Mark's personal flaws and really hammers those home. And we'll get into that with Connor because Connor was running the ship on that. We'll discuss that in a little bit. Jason Munns is going to join us during the second hour and one of my personal favorite segments, maybe just pure joy. Drunk Munns from the Bahamas when
I wasn't here. I missed it.
I think it was, because I believe this was I can't remember if it was a football, there was a press conference or something. I want to say maybe a Norvell press conference or something you had to be at, and that's
I think it was when I got food poisoning, to be honest with you. I think I was sick. I got food poisoning one night. I ate a bad piece of salmon, and I got food poisoning, some undercooked salmon, and got food poisoning and missed a show, and it happened to be Drunk Munz's show.
Did you go score 40 in the finals? and then tell everyone that you were food poisoned by Costco?
No, yeah, this was not pizza. This was salmon.
Okay.
Much more believable undercooked salmon than,
yeah,
than
the pizza.
Poisoned pizza.
Pizza Hut pizza. I guess, yeah. God, okay. We'll get into that. So Drunk Muns, we will play that for Jason so he can relive that moment because it was just absolutely spectacular. I think without a doubt, the single biggest sports event last year, sports moment in the city of Memphis, was no doubt the SMU game because of game day, the Liberty Bowl packed out in blue in a way that I'm honestly not really certain I ever thought was actually possible, and just an unbelievable weekend. And because of that, we got some tremendous guests. And let's start first with a man that is actually the point man, indeed, of College Game Day. We had Reese Davis on. We'll get into Desmond in a little bit. Then we'll get into the King. Of course, it was the guest picker. But I figured it made the most sense to start with host, then go to Desmond, then go to King. Here was what Reese Davis had to say the week of College Game Day here in Memphis. We now welcome on the host of ESPN's College Game Day. He is indeed Reese Davis. He's on Twitter at Reese Davis.
Reese, the trucks are going to roll in tonight after the Freedom Awards at the National Civil Rights Museum and the Elton John concerts over at FedEx Forum. And then tomorrow they're going to spend the day.
Wait a minute. I'm missing Elton John tonight?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Elton John, the farewell tour is coming to FedEx Forum tonight.
Still time to call wheels up, Reese.
Yeah. but the trucks are going to come in tonight. And then tomorrow they're gonna start building this set, and by Friday there's gonna be this huge television set, and it's like it is amazing to me when I hear just sort of the PR people tell me what this operation is as a part of it. Do you marvel at like this is like it's almost like the closest thing to the circus? Like it's amazing how you guys just kind of your crew kind of just rolls into town and just creates this event out of nowhere. Do you marvel at it still when you go to these places week to week, just like what you guys do on a week-to-week basis during the college football season?
There's no question. We have more than 100 people that travel in some capacity with the show. That extends from on-air producers, guys who build the set, truck drivers, audio specialists, whatever it might be. And the work that they do and the sense of pride that they take in their work, it really, I think, reminds all of us who are on the air that we can't function without them. And we've all become very close. We're all really good friends. In fact, we had a couple of guys on our crew last week in South Dakota who are celebrating their birthdays, one of them turning 50. So, I went out and a couple of us went out and joined them and, celebrated and wished them happy birthday because we all know each other. We know a little bit about each other's families, and they're part of a big, huge part of the team and family. And to watch them work and the precision with which they work, and there are rarely any missteps. If there are obstacles or challenges, they find ways around them. It probably is very much like the circus. I'll tell you one of the more amazing things you'll see is that occasionally we will go to a place, Alabama comes to mind. When we set up, oftentimes when we go to Alabama, we set up on the Walk of Champions, which leads up to the entrance of Bryant-Denny Stadium. Done a really nice job in that area, provides a great backdrop for the show. But if it's an afternoon game, then, the team has to come in there not too long after the show is over. They usually have about an hour to an hour and a half to get it all taken apart and loaded up and out of the way, and they do it. The flip side of that was when we did the show Week Zero at Disney World. They didn't start because, it's Disney World. They had other things going on. They started putting the set together and getting everything ready. I think they were able to start like at 1 a.m., prior to the start of a 9 o'clock show. And they did it. They built the whole thing. And, it's really a remarkable thing. We've developed a bond. In fact, I don't know how this tradition or superstition started, but one of our truck drivers, the guy's been with us, and he's driven around every rock and roll band you can imagine over the years, a guy named Tommy Marshall. And I think I've done it one or two times in my 5 years on the show just because maybe he's been busy or gone. I won't go up on stage until Tommy and I greet at the bottom of the stairs and I shake his hand. I don't know why we do that. We just started doing it sometime along the way, year one. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's just something that is meaningful to me because he's a big part of how we are able to get the show on every week because he drives the truck.
That was indeed Reese Davis. And I remember one of the, I think maybe kind of one of the concerns some people had was, would Memphis show up? And I had,
it's probably the most memorable event since I got to Memphis.
I had
in 2017.
I had zero doubt.
It was that was an unbelievable day. It was so much fun to be there, to cover it, to see that scene. I mean, that was just incredible.
So then we had, of course, the one, the only, Desmond Howard on the program. And Desmond had this to say. Please now to welcome on Desmond Howard. Desmond, of course, one of the analysts on ESPN's College Game Day, one of four players to win the Heisman Trophy as well as the Super Bowl MVP. He's a member of the College Football Hall of Fame, the class of 2011. But more importantly, Desmond, we have to ask, did you get any clarity on your tweet that you sent over the weekend asking about what should be some can't-miss meals for you here in Memphis that don't include pork or beef? Because as a lifelong Memphian, I got to tell you, that really limits our options here.
Yeah, I like to make people have to go outside their box a little bit, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So I put that, you know, when I exclude pork or beef, it really starts to make them think. And, yeah, I think I got some pretty good options. I can't wait to get there to try a few of them, and I'm excited to get to Memphis.
Desmond, you've been a part of College Game Day now for a while. All these years later, why is this show so special still? Why does it still hit the mark, if you will, with people like few other pregame shows do?
Wow. I think first and foremost, I would have to say that the way it's been produced has been very effective. This is a well-produced show. It's been like that since I started in 2005, and we've had different producers. But the thing that they have in common is that they have a love and a passion, not only for college football, but they have a love and passion for trying to get it right. Meaning, when we're in our production meetings, it's not just a quick brief meeting about some topics and, hey, let's talk about this, let's talk about that. I mean, we get in depth about some of the most, I think some of the most surface topics to some people, but they have depth to us because we care about how we get this information out to our audience, if that makes sense to you.
Well, and so one of my favorite things we've done on this show over the year was in the fall playing Beat the Degenerate with Jeffrey. And I think, so obviously everyone knows the King went on College Game Day as the celebrity guest
Reese
picker.
Cut a promo on him on Friday, maybe?
For College Game Day. But he got his practice reps here on the Giannotto and Jeffrey show when we had the King on for Beat the Degenerate. And I'd argue, we had some great guests on Beat the Degenerate. The mayor came on.
Oh, yeah.
Jeremiah Martin came on. Dylan Brooks came on. We'll
Jarvis?
In a sec, Jarvis Greer.
Jarvis, first ever?
And we had some great guests. I don't think anyone surpassed the King. I thought the King was the best guest. He was a good picker, and he was entertaining. So this is my favorite Beat the Degenerate, Jerry the King Lawler, his warm-up, if you will, for his big moment on College Game Day.
We welcome on Jerry the King Lawler. Of course, you can always visit one of King's two fine establishments. King Jerry Lawler's Hall of Fame Bar and Grill, that's downtown right there on Beale. Also, go check out his barbecue shop right there on Germantown Parkway and Walnut Grove. Highly recommend both. Of course, he is on Twitter, at Jerry Lawler. King, you returned to Monday Night Raw. Ratings went
well, first
up.
First of all, let me say, you said that right. I need no introduction, but you know, if you don't give me one, I'll body slam you. And the plug is for the barbecue restaurants as well, right?
Well, as long as I don't get the clothesline, I feel good. Or the pile driver.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, King. So we call this Beat the Degenerate because Jeffrey Wright is a degenerate gambler. And each week we have on a notable Memphian. You are very much so a notable Memphian to pick the games with us. So far through 5 weeks,
The celebrity picker, if you will, is 28-22. I am 29-21, and Jeffrey is 23-27.
Now, King, I should preface this by telling you, don't let me get hot, because I did actually beat our celebrity picker last week, and the week before,
Jeremiah Martin was on last week.
The week before, I tied, so I'm close to a winning streak here. So don't let me get hot.
Now I will say, so Jeremiah went 4-6 last week, so I think you can beat that, King. I think you've got that in you.
I know I'm going to beat that.
Okay, all right.
It's the king.
Okay, so let's.
Now listen, let me tell you guys. Here's what I've been wanting to bring this back. I may bring this back on your guys' show. Do you guys remember there used to be a famous football prognosticator, and every week, this goes way back, so you guys may not even remember this, but every week you could go, I don't know, into certain stores or whatever and pick up these little sheets that he would put out. And it was called Leonard's Losers.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
He would pick the loser of the game rather than the winner.
It's a good gimmick.
It is a good gimmick. So it sounds so great to just come back with a little segment called Lawler's Losers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not actually that. We would love to host you here on Gianotto and Jeffrey.
We can work that out.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're gonna try that today. I'm gonna pick the loser of the game, and then you can still figure out, you know, how it's gonna work out and whether I'm right or wrong. Okay.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay.
Lawler's losers, baby.
Lawler's losers. All right, so let's start Friday night.
So everybody out there that's listening right now, when you hear this, you bet on the team that I don't pick.
There you go.
I'm gonna tell you who's gonna lose.
And if the audience
you bet
would
on
do,
the other team.
If the audience would do that with me, they'd be winning money this year.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
He's just a star, Mark. And I remember
he did really well too.
And I remember there was originally some pushback on the King's doing the guest pick, and I was like, no, this is a man that has done live television for most of his life. He is a performer, and he did not disappoint at all. The Batmobile, everything. God, it was fantastic.
Yeah, he was great. He was fantastic. All right, and then last but certainly not least, I think the biggest story that emerged towards the latter half of our year on air. Like, obviously, the Tigers dominated. It was Tigers basketball recruiting when we were first starting out, that number one recruiting class. Then it became this historic Memphis football season that featured College Game Day, the first conference championship in 50 years, first outright conference championship in 50 years, then the Cotton Bowl experience. And then as we moved into 2020, before this pandemic hit, the big story that emerged was Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies and how surprising they rose to from a team that was expected to be one of the worst in the NBA to, if the playoffs started today, the eighth seed in the Western Conference playoffs. And obviously Ja Morant appears to be not just a future star, a star right now, right here in Memphis, a star unlike any we've had. But there are other parts to it, obviously Jaren Jackson Jr. And then I think a big story, a big kind of sub-story, if you will, from this season was Dylan Brooks and how he became a consistent player, how he became sort of the third wheel, if you will, and did so well over, you know, let's say the first 50 games of the year, that he earned a 3-year contract extension from the Grizzlies. And he probably had the most memorable soundbite of the last 6 months or so when he called out Andre Iguodala right before the NBA's trading deadline. And so we were lucky enough to have Dylan Brooks. This is when he got off to a quick start to the season, but before he was truly hit his groove from the year. But we were lucky enough to have him on as part of Beat the Degenerate because he's a big Oregon football fan. And we talked to him about Ja Morant, about his development this season. So here is Dylan Brooks, our favorite Memphis Grizzlies interview of the year.
Has it been as fun as it is? Has it been as fun playing with him as it is, as it's been to watch him early on here?
Yeah, you know, it is. You know, he's a special talent. He's so freaking good. And, you know, he understands the game at a different level. You know, as a rookie, you know, it's kind of hard to get your feet wet and all that as a point guard. But, you know, he's found his niche. You know, he gets to the rim whenever he wants. He makes plays out of the pick and roll. He's so fast and crafty with the ball. He could put it behind his back, put it through his legs in traffic, and then find the open guy. And then he could finish with the bigs. You know, they say that he's the lightest player in the NBA, but he still finishes on those 300-pound, 250-pound, you know, big. So, you know, he's got a lot of heart, and, you know, that's why I respect him so much.
You're playing pretty well, too. What's clicked? I mean, obviously, it seems like you've rediscovered, you know, obviously last year was tough with the injuries. It seems like you've rediscovered sort of that touch, that whatever the feel that you had during your rookie year when you were really rolling. What have you been able to accomplish here early, and what do you want? What's left for you to do this year in terms of really fulfilling what you want to fulfill as a player?
I want to just be consistent, you know, every single day, you know, being consistent, you know, going out there, you know, putting up, you know, the numbers that I need to put up, you know, for us to win games, playing hard on the defensive end, and then just making that every single game, every single time we come out here, regardless of if it's a back-to-back or if it's, you know, my body's tired, you know, find a way to keep replicating that every single time. And then I just ultimately get more confident. And, you know, I work my ass off every single day. So, you know, I'm prepared and ready to play. And then, you know, it just shows out there on the court.
John Morant, he's so freaking good.
Yeah, this is, like, I want to say that this was an interview in November. So it was around the time, when Ja had those first moments. We hit the game winner in Charlotte and had these glimpses. He wasn't totally the Ja Morant that he became, but you could already tell, oh man, this guy is different. And it just underscores, like, whenever the NBA comes back, and we'll have some news on that at the 3 o'clock hour. There's been some developments in the NBA, but whenever the NBA comes back, we're getting to watch a franchise that's obviously completely transformed its trajectory over the past year, but also a franchise. Like, these are the best moments where you get to watch a young nucleus come together in real time. And that's why this season, even though they were, I think, 32-33, that's, you know, it's not the greatest record, but when you take it in the context of this is just the beginning, it's just so exciting to see what they could become, these Grizzlies, because of Ja, because of Jaren, because of Dylan Brooks, because of Brandon Clark, because of DeAnthony Melton. We're in for a fantastic ride here in Memphis. Here on the Giannotto and Jeffrey Show, we'll be around to chronicle it all.